Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance, live from the Kintech Studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. It's a Wednesday, so we did the crossover in the first segment, which means right now, let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, January 22nd. It'll be a bit of an abbreviated version of the whiteboard here. We'll try to get some talk and audio in after it, but we'll start with the headline, which, of course, is the Canucks lose a dull affair, we'll call it, 3-2 against the Sabres at Rogers Arena last night. And, I mean, we talked earlier in the game, or in the show, Drancer, about just the lack of urgency, the lack of energy in that one. The lack of offensive juice, certainly, from the Canucks. It just feels, you know, somebody texted in earlier, like, oh, really? Like, this team responded after an energizing win with a listless loss? Like, I'm shocked. And it feels like we've seen a lot of versions of this game over the last several seasons.
Yeah. And look, in the context of the discussion we're having, the Miller discussion, the wider context,
yeah,
you know, there are, you know, some vibes issues, clearly, with this team. I thought the work rate was really poor. Last night, ironically, it felt like JT was the only guy going early in the game. And you sort of wonder, like, is he the one most invested in pretending things are normal? You know, like, whether or not that's a fair comment, I think it's a fair thing to think watching this team, given what we know about their posture, right?
Yeah.
And so in that way, where we're at with the Canucks at the moment seems to be detracting, not just from the on-ice product and not just from our interpretation of it, but I think from the team's actual play and results. Second period was good. Some moments where Besser, Pettersson, Hughes looked dynamic, certainly on that second period shift in which they scored. That was awesome. I know it sucks, but it wasn't a game without positives. It just wasn't a good enough effort in a game that they have to win.
Yeah.
Plus, they failed to close it out. Last thing that I thought about, the Pettersson line. Rick Tocchet said they were just fine post-game.
Yep.
I don't know if you saw that.
Yep.
They were Vancouver's best line from a generating shots perspective, but they also had the mistakes on the goals against.
Mm-hmm.
And so you end up sort of with this mixed night where obviously it's not good enough and they end up costing the team in the third, but at least they were the line that like occasionally did some productive stuff, built some productive stuff over the course of the game. Just sort of had me wondering, you know, if you're going to play this like low event style that really relies on variance to win, like that's more of a Miller game, I feel like. You know, if you're subtracting Miller from that game, like Miller's the heavy guy, the guy who can check, McDavid and company, or certainly the guy Tocchet wants to check McDavid, the guy with the size and the snarl. If you're going to be this low event team that relies on high-low play and playing north-south, simple hockey,
traffic in front of the net,
don't deke, don't turn the puck over at the blue line. Like if you're going to be that controlled game team that relies on variance, like Miller's your guy. If you're going to try and win with Pettersson, I felt like last night was instructive. Like he'll do good two-way things, he'll help you outscore opponents, but if you're trying to win 2-1, if you're trying to win 3-2, I don't know that style is going to get the most out of him or maximize his skill set. So I just, as this club sort of considers what's next for themselves, it was just a dynamic that I felt like was spotlighted by what we saw last night.
Yeah, it gets back to that question about Rick Tocchet. And if we want to have a bigger discussion about his system and his style meshing with the available personnel, I think that's very fair. I think that's a little bit what you're getting at, right, with the conversation around Elias Pettersson as well. To the broadsheet, and I mentioned this in passing in the crossover, but really not a ton new specific about the JT Miller trade situation for the Vancouver Canucks. But as I mentioned, your Athletic colleague Pierre LeBrun reporting in The Athletic yesterday that the Canucks have changed their tune a little bit to teams. You know, for a while there, it was, hey, we have to do a like-for-like deal, or we want a young center back. We want things that will help us win this season right away that we can plug in the lineup if we're trading JT Miller. Sounds now like they're more open to a futures deal where it's prospects, you know, guys who haven't made the NHL yet, draft capital, all of that, to make a deal work. LeBron also reporting, and I know our own Satyar Shah was kind of saying this as well, the Canucks, yeah, they'd like to do it, but they're also aware and telling teams that, hey, this could stretch to the deadline, this could stretch to the summer as well. And that point about being willing to take back futures, and as you said, just they're open-minded, they're willing to get creative, they're willing to figure things out. I'm a little surprised that hadn't happened already, because I do think, and the team was in a different spot, but you look at the obvious template of the Bo Horvat deal. And yeah, they got Anthony Beauvillier, but it's not like that was the centerpiece of the deal. And yeah, he slides into your lineup, but it wasn't a like-for-like replacement for Bo Horvat. But it was, okay, we'll do some futures, and then we'll go and shop at least one of those futures, and we'll try to find the piece we really need. They've shown they're comfortable doing that. If you are serious about moving Miller, and all reporting is, including from you, that they're very serious about it, it's not just their listing, they proactively want to do it. You have to be willing to get creative rather than sitting and waiting for, you know, the perfect 24-year-old center that the other team is going to offer up that you can slot into your lineup. I think you have to be willing to bring a level of creativity to it. And also, that's another reason to me to go get it done quickly. Because if you get it done and now it's not just theoretical that you're going to get these assets for them, but you actually have them, whatever the case is, and you have the cap space, well, who knows? Maybe an unexpected opportunity between now and the deadline comes up for you, and you're in a position to strike. Whereas if you're holding him right to the deadline, it's a lot harder to then to turn around and do the next step. So I think there's a ton of logic, obviously, to being open to futures, but I also think there's a ton of logic to saying, let's get this done as soon as possible for the benefit of us, the team, the players, everything.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it's fair. Yeah, and look, I think as much as the team... the franchise has a history of dithering, Jim Rutherford doesn't really.
No.
This is a pretty decisive executive, so I'm pretty sure the what are they waiting for thing is not falling on deaf ears.
Well, I always think, too, you know, what one thing you've said about Jim Rutherford's MO when it comes to adding to his team is being willing to overpay for the right fit. You know what I mean? With Lindholm, it's like, Hunter Brustevich, sure, we'll put him in the deal because we think Elias Lindholm is the right fit for us, and we're not too worried about giving up that extra little bit of value for future assets. And I almost think here there needs to be an inverse mentality, right? Where it's you're recognizing the value of maybe removing a bad fit or changing the mix instead of being hung up on the exact value in the assets you're getting back. You know what I mean? Like it's the same. I think it's the same mentality, or it could be the same mentality just applied to selling rather than buying. And as you said, that's Jim Rutherford. He likes to make moves. He likes to deal. So there's every reason to get it done. And there's every reason why Jim Rutherford would want to get it done. Hopefully it gets done at some point here.
Rick Tocchet noting, by the way, that he was as disappointed as he's been in a performance. This was after Canucks practice. As disappointed as he's been in a performance from the Canucks since he arrived in Vancouver.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons I want to hear from Rick Tocchet. Yep. So we'll whip through the rest of the whiteboard here, and then, you know, always good to hear that in context and hear how his voice sounds and all of that. So we'll do that. We'll get to that in just a second here. Lineup notes: Canucks practiced today at Rogers Arena. No lineup changes to the lineup that faced Buffalo Sabres last night. So, you know, Mark Friedman with Quinn Hughes, Pettersson, DeBrusque, Besser as your top line, et cetera, et cetera. Archer Shelov's assigned to Abbotsford by the Canucks before practice. Playoff and standings update: the Canucks playoff chances per Dom's model dropped to a season low 69%. Shorty will love that. Or I guess Shorty will really be excited when it's 40, if it's 42. 42.0. That will be what Shorty is really excited about. I think he likes 69 as well. So they dropped to 69% in Dom's model.
69% is...
it's a season low.
Yeah. I mean, when you get to 69%, one thing to remember is that you can't
go either way.
You can't have it both ways.
We were on the same page there.
Yeah, we were
on the same page there.
Don't love that. Love.
Anyways,
that.
They remain 1 point back of Calgary, and the Flames now have a game in hand. Do you want to hit anything in the betting odds here for us?
Yeah, I mean, let's check on the make the playoffs odds. The Canucks odds to make the playoffs, they're down to -130 to make, +100 to miss.
Yep.
I mean, now we're talking about like a 55% implied probability according to the markets. I mean, that is wild, wild stuff. Also, Quinn Hughes dipped narrowly into favorite territory for the Norris. And I'm curious to see. I just wanted to just update. I want to see if that altered at all with their loss. Yeah, so Quinn Hughes is now favored to win the Norris, +130, ahead of Cale Makar at +140. Remember, you used to be able to bet Makar against the field at like 4.5 to 1. So I hope people got that. But yeah, Quinn Hughes, now the Norris favorite. Listen, if the Canucks miss the playoffs, it's going to be very hard for Quinn Hughes to win the Norris. Like, more than anything at this point, I think Quinn Hughes is very well positioned. He'll obviously need to continue to play at an awesome level, but he's going to. He's Quinn Hughes. The key thing, though, is if the Canucks don't make it, if they don't make the postseason, that's gonna tilt.
Very much hurt his chances.
Yeah, no, kill them dead. That's going to tilt the odds in Makar and Werenski's favor in a major way.
All right, that's the whiteboard for today. As mentioned, Rick Tocchet, the team practice at Rogers Arena today following a disappointing loss against the Buffalo Sabres. Here is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet.
Yeah, I mean, listen. I think after last game, throwing the game away against Buffalo, you'd assume that. I can only go from day to day. I'm obviously very disappointed of last night's game. But going into today, I thought it was a really good practice. I know people laugh, practice, but I didn't like the practice before the Buffalo game, but I did like practice. So hopefully it correlates, if that answers your question.
Not really, but...
Yeah, right, okay.
Continue.
Yeah.
Rick, start with me on this question. Quinn Hughes is having a great season for you again.
Yeah.
Won the Norris Trophy last year. Can there be an issue where you have guys who rely on him too heavily? And don't go, you know, with using their skill, thinking he'll do it all himself, deferring to him. You know what I mean?
Good question. I mean, I've played some great players. I mean, yeah, you don't stop playing because you play with a great player. I mean, that's asinine. You know, you want to use that great player to your advantage. So I don't know if that theory, I don't know. I mean, you have a great player. You should embrace the fact that I get to play with this player. You know, how can I be better for this guy and the team? Not just about Huggy, but about the team. So, yeah, no, you just utilize that best player as much as you can for your benefit.
Are you worried he's trying to do too much?
I thought last night he did. I think for the most part, I think he's had an unreal year. He's been great. I thought last night was too much. You know, I want to put the team on my back. And we had a talk today. He likes to talk about after games and stuff, and we talked about that. And that's the one thing he has to guard himself, is to be trying to take the team on by himself, you know, the other team. And I think that's when he gets in trouble.
How much of that from his side is frustration at how things have gone this year in terms of consistency from a group perspective?
Yeah, I think Hughes has been unreal dealing with all the stuff that's happened this year. Like, for him to do what he's done this year, I give him a lot of respect for that, because, you know, some guys use it's distraction. It affects their game. You can tell. But for him, he's a mentally strong kid. So I give him a lot of credit. A lot of credit.
There's wanted posters of Connor Garland in Edmonton.
Yeah.
How do you think he'll handle the attention and the physicality that I'm sure is coming his way tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, he held the guy. So is that wanted posters? I mean, I understand if he smashed him in the face or got in a fight or did something. It's a hold. So, I don't really care what they think.
What's your impression of Connor, though, from your time with him in Arizona, how competitive he is
and how
he might embrace the situation?
Yeah, no, it's not going to deter him to go into the corners or in front of the net, and he needs his teammates to be there right behind him. Yeah, and you know, you heard Leon Draisaitl, I mean, one of the best players in the league. He said he didn't, you know, he was talking about this big war. So he didn't understand, why is there a war? It was about a hold and a couple things that happened at the end. So, we need 2 points. We don't need, there's no vengeance. I mean, it's just 2 points for us.
We talked a lot about inconsistency of this team, trying to figure things out.
Yeah.
What I'm also wondering is, you always wonder if a team is waiting for something to happen, you know, all that noise.
Yeah.
Can you sense any of that, and how do you fight that?
I mean, I can't speak for some guys. Maybe some guys are. I don't know. I can't tell you that. I go day to day, game to game, like I tell you guys. And obviously, last game was not a, you know, being up 2-1, and you know, I don't know. The shots were 18-11. I thought we were coming. All of a sudden, what 19 minutes later, it flipped. And why is that? Because guys stopped skating. Guys started doing fancy plays. Body language came back for whatever reason. You just can't do that. Winners don't do that. You don't slam gates. You know, we're up 2-1. Somebody misses an empty net. Okay, who cares? Why slam a gate? This is the stuff I've been preaching since I've been here, and every once in a while it creeps in, the frustration. Now, I don't know if it's because of the noise or not. I don't know. But we have to stop that stuff.
You've been pretty even killed. I've been waiting for you to eventually either lose it during practice.
Yeah.
I don't know if you get that. Is this the most difficult period of your two years that you've been here, Rick, with what we've seen, the way that this team's played, and now everything in the last few weeks?
Listen, this hasn't been easy, but that's my job. Like, you know, you tackle, you know, that's, you have tough years even as a player, and you face the music, and you've got to march along. I will say last game was one of the most disappointing since I've been here 2 years, yeah. For a team that played the night before, I think they got Lindy skated them that morning, I guess, apparently. For us to be at 2-1, and I thought we were okay, and then all of a sudden the tables turned. Yeah, I'm disappointed in the team. And I let them know that this morning, and we'll see the reaction.
Rick, I get a little bit of a different perspective than some of you guys, because through this thing, I see faces, I see body language. I haven't seen many smiles on faces. You mentioned body language.
No.
You know, Quinn just talked to us, didn't seem to be talkative. Are you concerned about the leadership on this team? Like, where's the leadership coming from?
Well, what did Tom Brady say? If you want to have fun, go to Disneyland. Winning's fun. Competing's fun. Listen, if you compete and you lose and you're competing and you're part of the process, yeah, you should smile and feel good about yourself. But I'm not sure we're happy with the process. That's why you got some frowns and people aren't happy. You shouldn't be happy. And I love that line. Go to Disneyland if you want to have fun. You know, we're in the business of winning, but saying that, it's the process of it, and I don't think we've liked our process. It's been a roller coaster ride all year.
Since Christmas, you guys lead the league in shot suppression. You're number one in a few. So it feels like that aspect of your game has sort of come around.
Yeah.
Why hasn't that translated to more wins, do you think?
Well, Well, it's the same thing. You're up 3-0. Even Edmonton, I know I took a couple of penalties and stuff like that. For whatever reason, and I think I told you guys before, is unlocking that you're up 3-0. Don't change it. If there's a 3-on-2, go for the 3 and do the middle drive. You know, make a turn-up play. Make that play. But for whatever reason, we're up 3-0. All of a sudden, we don't skate as hard. We stay on the outside more. All of a sudden, the D don't shoot the puck. It's not just one guy. It's a collective. I don't know if it's a mental block. And like I say, it's my job to unlock it. We're trying every day to unlock that attitude. Hughes doesn't have that mental block. I mean, he tries to play the same way. So we need more guys to have that attitude, like, you know, we're talking about.
And I guess you talked about the frustration of last night.
Yeah, it is.
First game since Christmas that you get points from Hughes, Miller, Besser, Pettersson.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything.
I mean, would they score two goals off the face-offs? Can't happen. You can't ice the puck. You can't leave a guy, you know, we have five guys in the zone. You can't leave a guy by himself in front of the net. They're big moment plays you just can't do. We gave Buffalo juice. I think there was a part of the game in the second and started third, like, hey, these guys aren't into it right now. That's what disturbs me and pisses me off. But saying, like I said, you know, we're still in the mix. But, you know, we can't keep saying the same story, though. We can't keep saying, hey, learning mistakes. I mean, eventually you're going to have to, you know, you put your hand on the stove too many times, you're going to burn your hand off. So we got to make sure that we really learn from this.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet, and with some very interesting commentary, some strong words. You referenced before we listened to it, him saying it's one of the most disappointing games they've had since he's been here. The one that stood out to me was just describing some of the things that happened in the third period.
Smashing the bench,
the body language came back. Winners don't do that. You don't slam gates. We have to stop that stuff. Something he's been preaching since he came here. Winners don't do that. And then at the end on a similar thing, or towards the end there, saying, you know, we don't skate as hard. We stay on the outside. He's talking about sometimes when they have the lead. I don't know if it's a mental block. Hughes doesn't have that mental block. That's what he says. Need other guys to get to that level. From the commentary yesterday about the moment's too big for some guys to today, winners don't do that. The body language is coming back. He's tired of the slamming gates and slamming your stick and all that. This coach, very fed up with his team right now.
Yeah. Yeah, and so are the fans watching it, right? I mean, I think so is management. I'm sure the other players are, right? Like, I'm sure the players themselves are fed up with all this. So
the other thing that stands out to me there is, do you remember later in Bruce Boudreau's tenure, get a lot of questions about the defensive side of things, obviously, because it was a disaster. And I remember Boudreau saying, like, yeah, we talk about this stuff. We have the video session and we practice and we show them and we say, hey, here's what we want you to do in the defensive zone. And then we get to the game and it doesn't happen. And we're starting to hear a similar vibe in a lot of ways to Tocchet, where he's like, we talk about this stuff. It's not, you know, I'm not saying give up the puck easily and don't try and go get it back. I'm not saying stop skating and sit back when we have a lead. He's frustrated about that. The message is don't do that stuff. And yet it keeps happening. And yet there is an inability for the team to translate his message onto the ice with any sort of consistency. Mm-hmm. It's another thing that's a parallel as we talk about, you know, the new coach bump wearing off eventually for this group in a couple of occasions. It's another parallel I see between Boudreau and now Tocchet. This experience of, we're saying it, we're telling you, why can't it happen on the ice consistently?
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough, man. It's a tough moment to be a Canucks fan, I think. And honestly, I'm sure it's tough for management too. You know, they went all in on this core and their ability to win in the near term, and to be in this sort of intractable moment so soon after it looked like you'd had a smash breakthrough success.
Yep.
Honestly, it's enough to make your head spin.
You thought you were past the, hey guys, this is like, winners don't do that slamming the gate stuff, right? Winners don't have that type of body language.
And you thought you were through the, hey, they might have to lose a trade to clear cap space and reset what they're doing phase of this team. Like, they thought they'd arrived. Well, I think we thought they'd at least arrived as like a playoff team. I sort of still had some skepticism about their ceiling, but I didn't think we'd be having these conversations in January.
No, absolutely not. Not like this. I thought we'd be debating the ceiling, maybe, about, as you said, and hey, how do they match up with the top five teams in the league? Those sorts of conversations. But this one, I'm very surprised. And man, it feels like it's only a matter of time before that other shoe drops. We'll see if it drops between now and our show tomorrow. We will be back tomorrow on a Canucks game day against the Oilers. Oh boy, that's going to be a fun one. Can't wait for that discourse.
It's been weird. No one's been tweeting that photo of me on the Sportsnet broadcast suggesting that this team should be dismantled the last few months. Like, what happened to that? It's weird.
So strange. Anyways, we'll be back.
Way to do that right as we're throwing to break.
We'll be back on the show here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.